Welcome back to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today, we're going to talk about sex magic. Maybe it's a topic you know about, maybe you don't. But we're going deep. We're going so deep. We'll put your butt to sleep. We're going to go deep into the foundational belief of all occult doctrine, all right? All occult belief systems, when you dig down, when you get to the bottom of the rabbit hole, it's about sex magic. Mark Booth called sex magic the most closely guarded secret of the secret societies. Today, we're going to find out. We're going to cover ancient symbols of the sun and the moon and how it plays into the male and female polarities. We'll get into some real-world occult demonstrations of how they've been doing this, from CERN to various occult philosophies. We'll look at the religious persecution of sex. So listen up, my Christian warriors out there. Because there's some persecution of the sexy time by some of the religious systems. And we're going to get into the beliefs of Tantra, the cult of Tantra. Talk about Aleister Crowley, Jack Parsons, the Babylon workings, so much more. And this is going to be part one. There's going to be two parts to this, all right? And part two is going to get deeper into some seriously dark territory. That's why I'm going to put part two only on the supporter feeds. That'll be out next week. We're going to explore how sex magic was part of the Ordo Templi Orientis magical order. We'll address how Stanley Kubrick, when he filmed Eyes Wide Shut, his last film, underlined certain passages in a book. That book is called Cult and the Occult, and I bought a copy of it. You can't get it online. You can't get a PDF. You can't get a Kindle for $5. You got to find a copy. I was like Johnny Depp in Ninth Gate, trying to find a copy of this thing. It goes for $300-$400. I found a copy for $100 out of the UK, so I bought it just to check on this one thing, and let me tell you, it paid off. It paid off. This is a passage, because if you listen to my, I think I got 6 episodes of Eyes Wide Shut deep dives, we talked about the book about the making of Eyes Wide Shut, and they are the ones that confirmed he had underlined passages in this book, Cult and the Occult, that informed the way he would film the infamous orgy scene that was allegedly cut up and censored after Kubrick's death. And we're going to talk about what he underlined and why he underlined it. And this is why it gets into dark territory, and this is why it's only going to be in the supporter feeds in part two. Vampires, adrenochrome, and absorbing energy from young virgins.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But yeah, this is a very massive deep dive topic. Sorry, I'm screaming. I'm all upset. Because if you want to go further down the rabbit hole, you got to get onto the supporter feeds. I got 3 supporter feeds. It's how you support the show. And you're going to love it. But take a listen to part one for free. We're going to get into part one. This is going to be the safe for work sort of version, right? And then part two, we're going to get dark and weird. So without further ado, let's get into it. The main idea that you need to take away from this concept of sex magic is that human sexuality is believed to be a gateway to the deeper unconscious processes that function below conscious thought. And they believe, these occultists, they believe that sex is the underlying force that not only created this universe and this world, but it is behind all occult practices in Western esotericism, which is your alchemy, your ritual magic. Again, all the things we talk about so many times on this show. And if you listen to my appearance on Tinfoil Hat 586, which just dropped, you know, I'm sure you have. It was my 11th appearance, and I talked about the significance of the number 11 being the number of magic. Well, we briefly talked about sex magic But I've got a lot more to get into, and we're going to get into that today. This is going to be a no BS, no fooling around, no jokey times, right? I get on the show with Sam and XG and Johnny, and we're cracking jokes. We're having a great time. We're not having a great time today. All business today. I kid. You know, I'll throw in a couple jokes here and there, but this is some serious stuff. I've been researching this for several weeks now, and it gets really interesting. Anyway, there's a few resources I used for this. One, if you look at, okay, so Mark Booth, I'm going to start this out with a quote. Mark Booth, the guy who wrote Secret History of the World, said, and I quote, I gotta zoom in on my little notes here so I can read it. In the same way that in the secret societies, techniques are taught to control sexual forces as a way of achieving higher forms of consciousness, so there are also teachings on channeling the closely intertwined death forces. Osmond Spare developed a practice which involved closing off mouth, nostrils, ears, and eyes. In India, adepts including Bhagavan Sri Ramana and Thakur Haranath have achieved long death-like trances, which have even led to their being prepared for burial, then being reborn into a new higher form of consciousness. When you get into this, sex and death are very similar. Aleister Crowley said death was the ultimate orgasm. Because you see, the forces that create are also the forces that destroy. The opposing polarities. It's a concept you see over and over. And let's first get into a book by Ernest Busenbark called Symbol, Sex, and the Stars. All right, it's a very interesting book. The foreword by none other than the late, great Jordan Maxwell. And this is an old book, right? Let me get you the copyright date here. 1949. But then Jordan Maxwell wrote the preface in 1997, and I've got the 2003 version. Old stuff. This is old-timey conspiracy. Don't be fooled by the modern cover. That was redone in 2003. The chapter we're going to talk about is chapter 8. You know, they do these Roman numerals. It throws me off. Chapter VIII, chapter 8, sex symbolism. It talks about how the sun and the moon is the original form of pagan religious worship. Obviously, you've got opposing polarities there with the sun and the moon. And they used to worship the fertility cycle of nature. And they believed, to sum up a lot of stuff, that the sun was the male polarity, and the earth was the female polarity. And when the sun was at its peak, high noon, maximum sun, it would impregnate Mother Earth. It was having sex. Yes, sexy time in the cosmos. And they go to support that idea with various ideas that are actually kind of interesting. They said the earliest languages didn't actually have gender-neutral terms like we do in English. And I remember this. I took 2 years of Spanish in high school. In la escuela. Is that even right? I don't know if that's right. I don't use it too much. But in Spanish, they assigned male and female to the terms, to the nouns. And they thought that the universal order was male and female, opposing polarities. And male was assigned the positive polarity, female the negative polarity. Not in the sense that females are negative, my ladies. It's kind of like in Kabbalah, they've got the two different, what they call it, the pillar of mercy and the pillar of severity. Anyway, the two pillars in the Kabbalistic tree of life. One is assigned male positive and the other is assigned female negative. Well, the male forces are assigned life, which is ironic because females provide life, but whatever, right? The male is symbolized by fire, life, the sun. Female is symbolized by the opposing forces, death, water, or the earth, or the moon. And they go through this description about how they used to sacrifice kids to Astarte. I think I'm mispronouncing that name. I heard this, the goddess Astarte or Astarte, on a show, and they said it, and I thought, oh, I've been saying that wrong this whole time. I think so. But the early Christians denounced all these things. As you know, when you read the Bible, they talk about, like, hey, don't be sacrificing them kids to Moloch anymore. We don't need to do that. Well, it's interesting because the early Christians denounced these cults, these pagan cults that would sacrifice their kids to Astarte because they would do it in bodies of water. Because that's, again, the female concept of death and water. And we talked about this in Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic when we talk about the early Aztec cultures and how they would do child sacrifices in the cenotes in Mexico, which I found interesting that I would kind of find support for why that would happen in this book. But the early Christians called these the devil's yonis, because the yoni, which is the female genitalia, is symbolized by a body of water. That's what they believed for thousands of years. They actually go through the idea of the origin of the word titty. I think. They don't say it like that. That's just what my stupid brain goes to. There was a mountain that Apollo was born on called Tithonia. Tithonia, which meant nipple. Because back then, any sort of hill or high place or mountain was viewed as feminine breasts. And they allegedly also sacrificed there. They would put sacrificial altars on high points, high places, they called them. It says that Abraham, when he tried to sacrifice Isaac to the God, did it there. Moloch, apparently, was also set up on a hill. That's why a lot of the architecture is of domed structures. It represents the female. That's what they claim in this book. In fact, they talk about the Holy of Holies, which, if you read the Bible, they talk about how at the Temple of Jerusalem, the Holy of Holies was in the inner sanctum. Only the priest could go in there because God would appear in there above where they stored the Ark of the Covenant. That's where they would house it, in the Holy of Holies. Well, they said that this was actually an old term. In the ancient temples, they called it the Holy of Holies because it was the womb of the building. And this is where the idea of establishing temples and churches facing east, or the sunrise, came from. And this is a riff on a lot of the, what do you call it, monolithic structures, where the stones would be set up in such a way that they would be facing towards the vernal equinox or the summer solstice. Or they would set it up on a day sacred to the saint of which that building was venerated to, dedicated, wherever the temple was dedicated to. An example, the Egyptian temple of Thebes, there was this avenue with Sphinx on either side of this avenue, right? And it lined up such that on June 21st, which is your summer solstice, the day where the sun is at maximum power because it's the longest day of the year, the most northern point on the journey, the sun's rays would actually shoot down this avenue on that specific day and project onto a sacred image inside the Holy of Holies, the womb. The sun's rays would impregnate the womb. This was the impregnation of the seed into the womb. Again, the idea that the male sun, the male solar forces, impregnate the female earth forces. I got a quote for you. It says here, almost universally, the right hand has represented masculinity and good fortune. The left is associated with femininity and bad luck. This is exemplified by the word sinister, which originally meant left-handed, evil, unlucky, and by the word dexterous, meaning right-handed or lucky. And it talks about Jesus and Shiva would be seen raising the right hand, right? Jesus blessed with the right hand. That's why in the Greek Orthodox Church, when you get married, the priest blesses your rings and places them on your right ring finger. In America, it's typically the left ring finger, but in the Orthodox tradition, it's the right finger because Jesus blessed the disciples with the right hand. And what they're talking about here is the idea of a right hand, the left being evil, the right hand being good. This is the idea of the right-hand path and the left-hand path. We've talked about this concept many times. The idea is that the left-hand path is the path of non-union with the divine. Non-union. Seeking God for oneself without the assistance of a church or whatever. Finding God within. That's the left-hand path. Satanism and stuff, that's left-hand path. Gnosticism, left-hand path. Tantra has both right-hand path and left-hand path. But the one we've talked about most often is left-hand path Tantra. And we're going to get more into Tantra later. So, and there's another interesting... Because again, this book was written in the 40s. It talks about the 666 hand or the AOK or as it's now known as the white supremacist symbol. It talks about that. It says a side view of the hand with the thumb and forefinger forming an O and the other fingers raised is a male sexual symbol. It may also be read as 1 and 0. Right? You got a 1 and a 0 because if you keep all the three fingers upright, that's a 1 and then the circle you make with your thumb and forefinger is a 0. You got a 1, 0. Because in Kabbalah, 10 is the number of the creator. There's 10 sephirot on the Kabbalistic tree of life. It's also how the great Freeman Fly predicted 9/11. When the magician jumps from 9 to 11, skipping 10. Skipping God and becoming God on his own through the left-hand path. And in the book, they talk about how if you can see the video, you can see what I'm saying, but the AOK 666 hand, white supremacy sign, whatever that is, it's a phallic sign. It's about masculine patriarchy, which is very interesting when you see how in the recent years it's been hijacked and used for that reason. Now, it also talks about the moon and how the symbol is of the horns. The Mano Cornudo, another, the witch hex, the rock and roll horns, the devil horns. That originated with moon worship and it was the sign of divinity because the bull horns stood for honor, power, and good luck. And they originally showed the moon goddesses portrayed with the horns on their head. You see that often. That's why the Italians and the Greeks used the horns as a way of averting the evil eye. But it goes into a lot of ideas about and the most basic form of symbol is the sun and the moon for the god and the goddess, or the pillar and circle, the 1 and 0. The pillar, of course, being the obelisk, the erect male phallus, the symbol of the sun. And the circle representing the yoni, or the reflecting pool next to an obelisk. Again, the body of water represents the feminine forces. Well, that's all fine and dandy, right? But you can see where the roots of the idea of sex magic go back into these pagan cults. Right or wrong? Okay. Now, we're going to fast forward quite a bit. But you know how I've been talking about how modern science, I believe, is using ideas of the ancient alchemist, you know, Isaac Newton and so on. We talked about this on Tinfoil Hat. I won't go too deep into this because you can check out that episode, which you should. Support your boy. Support Tinfoil Hat. I'm an honorary member on the Mount Crushmore. I've got a lot to live up to. I got to get you guys to listen to Tinfoil Hat too, because we actually went into this idea. But if you look at CERN and what they're doing, this research into Higgs boson, the God particle, what they're doing is they're smashing atoms to get to the subatomic level, to the quantum level, because they have yet to connect Newtonian mechanics with quantum mechanics. You've got the laws of the observable universe on a more cosmic scale, but then things happen and break down on the subatomic scale, and they're trying to find a way to connect these two things, a grand unified theory, they call it. Some people think string theory will connect these two. But if you look at it from the lens of a conspiracy theorist, you could see how it's arguable that they're trying to get down to the macro level to learn how twilight language or ritual magic can trigger real world events. Because isn't that kind of the thing with science? They want to understand the mind of God so that they can become God. And it doesn't have to be this nefarious thing. Isaac Newton made all these laws of Newtonian mechanics and physics, and we use those to build buildings. And that's pretty cool, right? I like living in a house. Requires engineering and all these different equations to make that happen. But you have to understand mathematics and physics and the mind of God who created this world to do so. So the real question is, how far do you take that? What's the difference between trying to become God and trying to make life better and understanding the mind of God? Well, it's arguable that when you look at the ideas of ritual magic, where left-hand path magicians are trying to become God by using law of attraction, ritual magic, understanding the twilight language, using the alchemical principles of as above, so below. It's arguable that these quantum physics physicists, whether they know it or not, are practicing occult ideas. Nuclear fission, for instance, nuclear fission is about breaking apart atoms, breaking apart this balanced atom with the neutrons and protons and then the electrons, the positive and the negative, the male and the female, this perfected coupled pair that makes up the primordial matter. In the occult, they talk about the capitalist spark of creation or the monad. They're trying to break that force down, trying to overcome the unified force of God. And if you research some of the legends like James Selby Downer or Michael Hoffman, they talk about the killing of the king ritual. That's what JFK was allegedly subjected to. It's all about the destruction of primordial matter. How can they break down, like how far can they go to destroy the creation of God? And until CERN, they couldn't break down atoms. That was kind of it. Well, now they're like, look, we broke that atom in half. We can do that. And if you look to the first atomic bomb, the testing of the first atomic bomb, July 16, 1945, you can find a lot of occult ritualistic ideas here that beg for further research. They took the road down the Hornada del Muerto, that's the journey of death, to go to the Trinity site to drop the first atomic bomb. And you know those early scientists? They weren't sure what was going to happen. Did you know the one possible outcome was that it was going to destroy the world as we knew it? It was going to create this effect that would ripple throughout the whole universe and destroy all of us in the blink of an eye. That was one possibility. They weren't sure if that was going to happen or not. And you know what? They went ahead and did it. Then a month later, they went ahead and dropped it on some human beings in Japan. But it's interesting. It's called the Trinity Site. And if you look at the idea of the Trinity, even this book, Symbol, Sex, and the Stars, they claim that that's even a symbol of the male-female concept. And it goes to the idea of, oh boy, it goes to the idea of the male genitalia, which is two balls and a penis, right? But that was represented and symbolized as an upright triangle for a time. They would depict this together. They would also depict it on a cross or a towel, T-A-U, a towel, like a T, which supposedly represented the sun's rays impregnating the earth forces. Sometimes they'll even show the circle or the sun on the cross. But anyway, at the Trinity site is where they did this. Then a year later, in March 1946, we had the Babylon working ritual. And I've talked about this at length many times, so I'm not going to, again, go too deep into this. But Aleister Crowley was the one who gave Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard the idea of the Babylon working, based upon his Amalantra working that he used to channel the first gray alien ever depicted called Lamb, or the Path. And in Crowley's world, Babylon was not a reference to Rome. That's not what he's talking about. That's what the Bible says. The Babylon to him was the sacred goddess of sex magic. And in fact, he spelled it B-A-B-A-L-O-N instead of B-A-B-Y-L-O-N. Because in Gematria, that equals 156. And this number was significant to John Dee, who was the guy who made contact with the Enochian angelic forces, who told John Dee, hey, here's the language that God used to talk to Adam. You can use this to talk to us at any time. And that's what Aleister Crowley used in the Amalantra workings to make contact with the first gray alien. And then that's what Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard did in 1946 to make contact with the Whore of Babylon. Okay? Now, the Gematria of 156 is important because the grid upon which John Dee was given this language is a 12 by 13 grid, which is 12 times 13 is 156 entries in linear algebra there. So Jack Parsons does this ritual to evoke the sacred goddess of sex magic. And guess who comes into his life? Marjorie Cameron. And they hook up immediately. And Jack Parsons infamously blew himself up. But she became obsessed with this mission, this journey to produce the magical moon child with Jack, because Jack was supposed to impregnate the sacred goddess of sex magic, Marjorie Cameron, and they were supposed to have a child that was going to be the Antichrist, that would bring about the destruction of the world and bring about the Aeon of Horus, the new age for Aleister Crowley and all his occultist buddies. Well, they called it the Wormwood Star, this magical child, the moon child. Well, she would proceed to continue to do sex magic because she's like, look, I'm the goddess of sex magic. Even if Parsons is blown up and dead, I'm still doing it. And she would do it after his death. She would visualize making sexual union with Jack on the astral plane because he had moved on to the next dimension, right? And she would project her psychosexual will onto the conception, and during climax, she would start chanting Abrahadabra, that was Crowley's magical formula, for the great work. Now, she would not be successful. She would eventually miscarry, and I don't know. She was a mess. She drew paintings called like the peyote vision of her having sex with an alien. It's pretty wild. And she was also hanging out with Kenneth Anger, who's worth a deep dive on his own, I would argue. Kenneth Anger went to the Sicilian Abbey of Thelema, where Aleister Crowley was allegedly doing kind of the most heinous things over there. He was doing sex magic rituals with one of his women, Leah Hersig. Well, Kenneth Anger and Dr. Alfred Kinsey, yes, that, Alfred Kinsey, went over there to investigate. Anyway, but Jack Parsons, he said that tarot cards were a way that one could traverse this Kabbalistic tree of life. And the aim was to bring sexual union of the male and female aspects of God through sacred deeds and ritualistic actions to actualize God so that he may rain his grace upon the adept and the world. So even Parsons, following the formula of many, all the way back to these pagan cultures, pre-Christianity. And then, of course, we know that Crowley infamously thought Parsons was kind of a goofball and that he wouldn't close the portal correctly with his Babylon working ritual. And then what happens a year later, we get Roswell, yes. Roswell, which resulted in the formation of the CIA and the government projects and programs like Project Sign to investigate UFOs. Now, allegedly, I've seen a video about how Project Sign resulted in a UFO sighting that was legit, but General Vandenberg hid it because he didn't want to wreck his career. And they said, you know what we're going to do instead? We're going to make a new project. We're going to turn it into Project Grudge. And Project Grudge was all about disinformation and disproving UFOs. And now, you know, fast forward 70 years, and now the government's going to be like, well, maybe there's something going on here. So these occult beliefs, you'll find, like I said, sex magic is at the underlying force behind all the occult beliefs. And there's several occult beliefs we can talk about. As above, so below, we've talked about this. It's the idea that the soul is the microcosm that reflects the macrocosm or the cosmos. And magic is the link. It's linked through this energy called the astral light. This invisible substance that connects the matter, the material world, to the spiritual one. We also have the idea in Gnosticism that when God, the monad, created the world, he started by creating these perfected pairs, the Seges. These were opposing polarity forces of male and female. And there was like 8 or 10 of them or something like that. Probably 10, right? And from one of those, there was a female and male, obviously. And the female decided she was going to go ahead and produce an offspring without the male. And that thing was a hideous thing. And she wanted to hide it. So she kicked it out of the Pleroma, which is like where all these perfected pairs were existing, and it created our world as the Demiurge, because this Demiurge, you know, it was in the Pleroma where the perfected world existed for a glimpse of time, and it thought, man, how was that set up? I'm going to try my best. I remember a very brief glimpse of it. I'll try my best to set that up. And this is what the Gnostics believe, and they believe that the Demiurge created the world we live in, and it's actually this crazy psychopathic narcissistic god that demands we worship him. But it's all a ruse. Fake news god. But they believe that sex is the magical operation that resulted in creation. And it's the living symbol of the great source called God. It's the only way we can know God. And if you get into the Gospel of Philip, it speaks about the return of the soul to heaven being a spiritual wedding or the mystery of the bridal chamber. All of this is metaphorical for sex. Kind of like in the symbol Sex on the Stars book, like everything's a metaphor for sex. The moon and the sun, sex. In Kabbalah, you've got the union of male and female, reuniting the male and female aspects of the Godhead, because, again, humans mirror the divine, mirror the real God. You've got the idea of the unification of the conscious and unconscious mind. This is what Crowley believed. He thought that one's holy guardian angel was actually manifested from the unconscious. That's why at the beginning of the show, we talked about how sexuality is the the gateway to the unconscious, because you want to unlock that. You want to unlock the holy guardian angel to guide you on your true will. That's what they think. Occultists also believe that there's energy, psychic energy, involved with various paranormal events. And this is the same energy you found during sex. And this comes from Wilhelm Reich. He talked about the orgone energy, the orgasmic energy. Willow Smith and Jaden Smith, I think, were both members of this orgone society. But they didn't talk about that on the news. When you get down to it, orgon is orgasmic energy released during the time of orgasm. Paracelsus talked about it too, the astral light. But what's interesting is that poltergeists are believed to be these results of energy left ungrounded, unearthed. An adolescence who is disturbed is not able to earth its sexual energy into a partner. Sounds like masturbation to me. And they think that poltergeists are found in the homes of people who masturbate excessively, and they're releasing all this unbalanced sexual energy in the home. And if you think about Poltergeist, the movie, it makes you think like, whoa, is there something going on there? I don't know. Maybe there's some metaphors. It's probably worth another watch. Is there metaphors for masturbation or sex in Poltergeist? There's an Amherst house and Esther Cox. That's a famous case where the paranormal activity ceased when she got married. So she must have been masturbating all crazy, right? Getting that orgone energy up. Now, you could see why organized religion, the big Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, they persecuted all of these ancient pagan occult-type religions, the Gnostics, the Dionysian mystery religions, the Knights Templars, the Cathars, the witches, the Satanists. They're all accused of obscenity and perversion because of all their excessive hedonism, because they're always focused on sex. Like, oh, they just want to have sex. They're slutty. Well, when you look at it through this new lens, you can say, oh, it's not really just about having indiscriminate sex. It's about venerating and using the energies found during sex. It's kind of the purpose we're all here for, right? It's kind of the drive that drives all of us. So there is some energy behind that. And they considered sex to be the lower nature of man. This is the new, you know, and I'll just say Christianity, because that's kind of the most well-known to me. But these Abrahamic newer religions, sex is the lower nature. It's the Apollonian, right? Because if you look at the idea of ritual, you've got the Apollonian and the Dionysian. And Dionysian is to overload. That's like to do sex and to have the drumming and the music and the drugs. And it's to sort of, you know, get your consciousness in league with God, with the altered state. Whereas Apollonian is to deny. It's to fast. It's to restrain and withdraw in order to make contact. So the Christians said, look, absolute chastity is necessary for purity of the spirit and advancement of the spirits. Whereas the occultists, these Dionysian type practices, they use sex for contact with the divine. If you listen to my show on Hocus Pocus that I did in October 2021, we confirmed that that was part of the rituals in the book used for the movie. Cornelius Agrippa said that copulation was full of magical endowment. Now, what I find a little strange is that even in the realm of the occult, some of them have an attitude towards sex that's that was unexpected. Eliphas Levi, right? One of the most famous occult magicians. He thought that the fall of man was referring to sex. The original sin was when Adam and Eve made sexy time in the Garden of Eden. So when they say they were eating the forbidden fruit, that's what God's like, look, you can do anything you want, just don't do the, you know, the thing. And when they ate the fruit, that induced shame. Right? They were shameful. And then they covered up with leaves. They didn't realize they were naked until they had sexy time. And Helena Blavatsky even agreed with this idea, and she elaborated on it. Anyway. Yeah, so it's kind of strange, right? Or maybe they just see the power behind it and they believe in a Gnostic form of God where they're like, look, yeah, God was punishing us. He said, don't do the thing that you're made to do. And in Christianity, there is a little bit of a hang-up. The hang-up would be that if all this is true, that sex magic, the Dionysian rituals, the orgia, they call it, if that's a way that a common man and woman can make connection with God, that's a problem for Christianity. Because in Christianity, it's like, look, you want to meet God, you want to feel God's presence, you come to church, and you do the rules, you listen to the rules, and the priest will be your intermediary, a liaison, if you will, a middleman. So if you took that middleman out, now you could have what the occultists call the mystic marriage to God. And it removes the power structures. And if you look at how in the 1800s, Pascal Beverly Randolph, the guy I talked about with the Doctor Strange shows, he was the one that brought sex magic into Western esotericism and into America. And he thought that sex magic was going to be the catalyst for an egalitarian, equal rights society. He was talking about this stuff in the 1800s, equal rights. And he thought, I would argue, sex magic is a way that every man and woman can experience God without a traditional institution as the middleman, which the occultists believe is a control system, which you could argue, right? Maybe. Finally, let's talk about Tantra, and we're going to wrap it up for part one. In the ideas of Tantra, you've heard about tantric sex, right? Sting's always doing it, they say. They believe that the universe is actually in this state of a perfected opposing polarity locked together. Again, with the male and female polarities. And they're represented as the god and goddess of Shiva and Shakti in perfect union. Sexual union. That's what creates the universe. And this goes back to 10th century and even earlier, allegedly. The history of Tantra and the Tantric cults has been destroyed. But the female Shakti goddess is the primal active force, the Great Mother goddess. And as I talked about in Tinfoil Hat, she is the physical vehicle for Shakti. Women actually become the goddess Shakti on some level. They sort of channel that energy during sex. And in Tantra, women and men are equal. Whereas in a lot of the Abrahamic faiths, you know, there's a patriarchal tinge to most of it. Whereas the males will be the avatar for Shiva during sex. So they're reenacting the creative forces of the universe, becoming god and goddess. And again, Tantra is, much like sex magic, it informs a lot of the truth behind Western esotericism. It has all the elements you come to expect when you study the occult. The creation and destruction of the world. There's that sex and death juxtaposition again. You've got this pantheon of deities. You've got yoga and meditation and certain poses. You've got the same symbolism, astral travel, altered states, and sex rituals. Now, Kenneth Grant, he was the guy who was an acolyte of Aleister Crowley, supposedly took on where Crowley left off. He said Tantra forms the sexual mysteries at the heart of Thelema and Thelemic magic, which again was Aleister Crowley's religion, dictated to him from his holy guardian angel, Awas. And Kenneth Grant wrote these books called the Typhonian Trilogies, and these are about left-hand path Tantra practices in the West. And he's talking about the left-hand path of Tantra, basically. And this goes back through the tantric belief that the human body, male and female, they're temples. They're both laboratories in a way. And Tantra is the technology of spirituality and altered states of consciousness used to make communion with entities. That's why he created the Typhonian Ordo Templi Orientis. We're going to talk about the OTO in part two. But he created the Typhonian OTO, which is using ritual magic, sex magic, to make contact with entities, supramundane entities, as he calls it. And like Peter Lavenda wrote in The Dark Lord, this is no different than H.P. Lovecraft's books on Cthulhu, because you know how they summon this entity from the abyss? Orgies in the swamps. Yes. Could you think of a grosser place to have an orgy? But that's where they did it. Ritualistic orgies in the swamps is what brought this entity from another dimension. And that's what Tantra is doing, basically. No, that's what Kenneth Grant's incorporation of Tantra into the Typhonian OTO is trying to do. Making contact, making communion with these entities. But the sacred marriage of Shakti and Shiva, in terms of people that do it for Tantra, is to achieve this highest order of wisdom and the power that includes. In a way, they become a ritual magician, projecting their will to the cosmos. The cosmos will rearrange itself to provide the outcome the magician wants. And they do this through the awakening of the Kundalini serpent at the base chakra, the lowest chakra, the Muladhara, where Shakti, the female forces, reside in the Kundalini fire serpent. And when they do the right positions and the right practices and Tantra, have sex, the Kundalini serpent will awaken and rise up the body towards Shiva to make the sacred marriage in the highest crown chakra, the Sahasrara, the Sahasrara, or the thousand-petaled lotus. And once that happens, it unlocks energies, and boom, the magician is putting all the energy and power connected to the cosmos, connected to the gods, making their will happen. Left-hand path practices, my friends. So there you go. That's your first part of this, right? We went through a lot of the ideas that sex magic and sexual worship is a hidden force of nature in a way. The occult beliefs, you can't have them without the ideas of sex magic. That's why it's the closely guarded secret of the secret societies. And you see it with the symbolism of the sun and the moon, the male and the female, and all these different occult philosophies. That's what Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons were doing out there. That's what they were doing. That's how they were making contact. Now, if you want part two and you want to support your boy, you know where to go. I got three supporter platforms. And when you get on the system, and when you get on there, you're going to get the ad-free version of the show. You're going to unlock over 100 bonus episodes, including a three-part deep dive on Marjorie Cameron I did in 2018, if you want to hear more about this Babylon working stuff. And you're also going to get this part two, when I drop it here next week. It's going to go deeper into this dark territory that I hesitant to put on the free feed at all. And we're going to explore how sex magic fits into the OTO, including those levels of initiation that Aleister Crowley added to the OTO, if you know what I'm talking about. We're going to talk about Stanley Kubrick underlining a passage in this book that I paid $100 for. that informed his approach to filming the orgy scene in Eyes Wide Shut. It answers a lot of this strange ideas of adrenochrome and vampiring energy from the kids. It's kind of all there, to be honest. It's kind of dark. But this is the deep dive. If you want to get down to the bottom of the rabbit hole, this part is going to be far more controversial than the first part. That's why it's going on the supporter feeds only. So you want to support the show. And plus, if you go to patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher, or you go to IlluminatiWatcher.com and hit the VIP section, you're also going to get a copy of two of my books, The Dark Path and The Kubrick's Code. What more could you ask for? It's so good. Check them out. I've got links in the show notes as always, or you can go to allmylinks.com/IsaacW. That's got a jump off for everything I do, socials and everything. Or just go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, hit the VIP tab, and you can compare all three of those supporter platforms and see which one is right for you. You get all kinds of goodies. Oh my God, it's so great. Including all these bonus episodes for the people that want to go real deep down the rabbit hole, like on this one. So thank you for listening to the show. Until next time, stay woke.